Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to talk about the offense versus the Eagles. To do that with me is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Longtime friend of the show, content creator himself, and always great to talk football with you, Gabe. You know, coming out of that game where they threw for, what, about 82 net yards passing, I think it was, are you at a point yet where you're concerned about the Ravens' backup quarterback situation?
I've been concerned, actually. It's not a new situation to me. I mean, just looking at the depth chart, I think you have Josh Johnson, who's 15-year professional football journeyman, who's definitely his best days, if they ever were good, are probably behind him. And then you have a rookie who just played in his first NFL game ever, late round draft pick. I mean, it's really hard to evaluate based off of, you know, half a game, but definitely didn't give any reason to have a lot of confidence in him at this point. I know that, you know, there's probably some growth potential and upside that can come out of him, but going into a season without having a true viable backup option, I think is a real, real troubling issue to me.
Yeah. I would agree. And Josh Johnson, for those who don't know, he's obviously played for a ton of teams and a ton of leagues, and he's actually been in a fair number of NFL games. He's played in, well, 39 NFL games now at this point, which is actually very, very low number for a 15-year career because he's been in the league since 2009. But here's the really scary part. He's won one game ever as a starter in his career. That's just a little scary. He's lost eight, I think it is. But anyway, that was with Washington a number of years ago. He won that game, and obviously he's never won one with the Ravens, or we would remember. But I thought with Johnson, there was an issue with accuracy. There's a big issue with protection for Johnson. Everybody's acting like the protection was great in this game, and probably because Harbaugh said so right after the game. Oh, I thought the protection was fine. That's not the way I saw it. when I just say this, I think he only had one ATS opportunity during that entire first half as we scored it. So, yeah, I've got my sheets right here on the matter. I thought I did anyway. Well, anyway, I'll find this in the next moment or two. There we go. Yeah, pressure, ball out quick, ball out quick, ball out quick, pressure, ball out quick, ATS, pressure, and he's out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there wasn't much in terms of offensive game planning or scheming, and this game was kind of just very vanilla. I think that, you know, the Eagles did have some of their starters out there for, in the first quarter, especially. You know, had guys
on defense.
On defense, yeah. So I mean, for against the Ravens' offense, so, you know, Jordan Davis was there. I think Jalen Carter was there for a couple of series. Nolan Smith off the edge. So these are some highly drafted players, highly pedigreed players, and the Ravens really didn't have quite the same level of experience, I think, on the offensive line. So that tends to kind of lead to some of those mismatches that we saw, and that led to probably a lot of the pressures. But even then, I mean, it wasn't a pretty thing to watch. It was ugly offense. I think Josh Johnson, I mean, he's experienced. You could see that, you know, he bought time at, in certain places. He was able to maneuver a little bit, you know, scramble a couple times, probably had a chance to throw the ball and scrambled when he shouldn't have a couple times as well. But he wasn't in a great situation, but I also don't think that, you know, he really did anything above what could have been asked of him. Like he didn't really elevate at all is what I'm trying to say. So even with better players around him, if he was, you know, the Ravens' de facto backup going into the season, I'm not sure if he can actually kind of have an NFL caliber offense moving around him. And to your point, he's played in a lot of games. He hasn't been very successful in the league. I really don't think that he can kind of like keep the ball going for a game or a couple of games if there's anything that happens to Lamar Jackson.
Right. This team with the defensive talent they have really needs a game manager. And Johnson, I guess at his very best could be that. It's just, I'd rather have someone who we'd have a better hope is that. And you know, even a guy like Kenny Pickett might be that, you know, a guy who could continue through. Now that said, Pickett did nothing against the Ravens defense. In fact, none of their guys did anything against the Ravens defense. Pickett control, you know, held onto the football. Johnson did as well. But you mentioned the two times he left the pocket were big opportunities lost. One could have cost the Ravens a touchdown because it was a drive ending play inside at the 5 yard line, I think, where he left and ran to the three. He had just gotten up a first down, you know, on a whatever an eight it was, second eight, third and eight, whatever it was. He ran for 9 yards to get him in range. But then he wasn't flushed. He left a clean pocket. And he didn't have a clear path to the end zone and ended up getting tackled. And then he ended another drive similarly on an S0 where he left a clean pocket. Those were, you know, those were two of his ATS opportunities in theory. He only had one other. Those ATS opportunities, I don't count because they ended in runs. Actually, that's not true. The ATS for the end of the sack was his one ATS. That was his one ATS the entire game. But the other one that was ample time and space, had he thrown a pass, he ended up running the ball anyway, you know, from the 5 yard line. And that was frustrating. So I thought, you know, in terms of the throws he made, I thought he actually made some good throws. He made a throw to Wade that got dropped, would have been a 14 yard gain. He made the one really good deep crossing route throw of the game to Kirkwood. And it was a deep crossing route, mid range crossing route. It was about a 10 yard crosser, and Kirkwood took it another 9 yards. And that was the biggest play of the game. I mean, you know, they both defenses played reasonably well. The Ravens couldn't stop the run, which was frustrating, but they certainly stopped the pass and allowed only 2.8 yards, you know, per play. I just, Johnson certainly does not give confidence right now. And I'm just wondering what the Ravens option could be during the year. Is there a quarterback they could have on speed dial? You know, what can they really do to get the ship righted if they lose Lamar for 4 games? Now, obviously lose Lamar for a long time. Season's probably over.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think 4 games is probably, you're still in wild card territory probably if you lose Lamar for 4 games, especially if he is able to come back for a playoff run. But that's definitely like in the danger zone there when you're hoping to maybe get lucky and go 2-2 in that type of stretch. And depending on who you're playing, it may be maybe even worse than that. I think there's one obvious free agent who's out there, Ryan Tannehill. He's the by far the most experienced and successful quarterback who's available. You know, still played last year. I mean, he didn't have his best year, but I think he's still someone who's a serviceable quarterback. Obviously, you know, money's probably part of the issue there. I don't think at this point he would be expecting to compete for a starting position anywhere. Aside from him, is really just a bunch of career backups. And maybe somebody could be slightly better than what we have currently, but I don't think you're getting much of an upgrade. Then you're looking at, you know, potential cuts at the end of training camp. Maybe a possible trade for somebody to throw, you know, a 7th round pick for someone who's potentially going to be cut. I think that's probably the most likely means of acquiring a new quarterback. But I guess it's just, it's difficult right now. I think, you know, they drafted Leary, you know, they thought that he had some potential, but, you know, it doesn't seem like he's quite ready to be that guy. I don't know if they're going to carry 3 quarterbacks. That seems like a difficult place to be in the current NFL system. I mean, that's kind of a wasted, I mean, I know you get the extra guy, but it still seems like, unnecessary. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, my problems with Leary are a little different in this game. And if we want to move on to him, we can. But I want to maybe get back to one of the other backup options at the end of this. Leary, you know, comes to the Ravens with the reputation as a gunslinger. And there's some things he's done in camp that have that really indicate that he's kind of a quick processing quarterback. And one of them I like to see is guys who can make multiple fakes on a play. So he's a guy that, like late career Manning, like other players, will fake a pass, then fake a handoff, then drop back to the pocket, survey the field, and hopefully make a throw. He's done more of that, I'll say, in practice. This set of throws in this game, there's not like one big time throw in the group. Yeah. I mean, he barely threw the ball down the field at all. They had the 10-yard drive. Sorry, the 15-play drive had 10 runs on it late in the game. I mean, late in the game, they're trying to come back for a touchdown down. And, you know, they ran the ball 10 times. And they weren't real successful running the ball. It was a bunch of, you know, 3-, 4-, and 5-yard runs. They got the fourth down. You know, it wasn't like they were you know, chopping off territory like Patton through Europe or anything. This is a really unimpressive drive. But the throws he made, the first number I'm going to give you is the yards, the air yards on the throw. The second number is the yards after the catch. So his first pass was 0+4. Then he had a drop at 4 yards. Then he had a 5+1, a 1+10, and a -4+17. He had 6 total air yards on that drive, split among 5 passes.
Yeah, that's really, it doesn't give much confidence in that. It's a small sample size, but, and it's his first, you know, actual NFL competition. So I think that has to be kind of considered. And, you know, I think we'll talk about some other players too that are in the same boat. So there may be some nerves, you know, there may be some performance anxiety there. And maybe it's just a kind of like a you know, bad first step. But I think confidence is something that's, it's hard to kind of build without, you know, actually getting the reps. And I don't know, maybe we'll have 2 more games, right? So maybe he's out there for a full game week 3, and that's kind of going to be what decides it. Is he someone who you can actually have some confidence in if he's, you know, given a full opportunity? Maybe, you know, I mean, I don't think he's going to really have a lot of playmakers around him, so that's always going to be a bit of a challenge. But you're probably not going against the best competition either, so it kind of, you know, weighs itself back and forth. But I think you just need to see more out of him.
I mean, so we need to see more of him to see what he can do. And I think he will get a bigger and longer opportunity come that third game in particular to get, you know, probably Johnson gets a quarter and he gets 3 quarters maybe instead. There's some other people they need to generate an evaluation game for in that final game. And I'll get to that, you know, a little bit later in the episode. But getting back to Leary though, for a second, there's a lot of excuses that you can make for Leary. Like there are a lot of possible excuses you can make for John Simpson last year with all the penalty problems that happened, or for any player, you know, that comes from a set of circumstances that are not absolutely optimal, playing under good circumstances his whole life. The fact of the matter is Leary came to camp and he had an enormous advantage in the fact that Lamar Jackson was sick for all those days at the beginning of camp. He missed, you know, 5.5 days of practice or thereabouts, or maybe basically almost 6 days of practice. That was an awesome opportunity for Johnson, Leary, and Emory Jones, frankly, to get a ton more reps than they normally would. Effectively, all of Jackson's reps went to one of those three. And they didn't all go to Johnson. I can tell you, Leary was getting a ton of reps during that time. You don't get a much better opportunity than that to get in there with the guys you're going to be throwing to in the game. And then, you know, one example of a guy he has thrown to all camp and all of a sudden he can't find him in this game is Kadir Ishmael. Now, Kadir Ishmael has been he's been a demon in camp. He's looked like Darren Waller, real athletic, moves around the field, boxes out extremely well as a receiver, has good hands, catches the ball away from his body, does a lot of things very well. And yet for some reason, he did get a target. He might've gotten one target that was thrown out of bounds or something, but I don't believe he even got a target in this game in 12 routes run and definitely didn't get a catch. And Leary is the guy who should be throwing to him. And that's exactly the guy you want on some nice mid-range, easy pitch and catch kind of throws for your quarterback. You want to find an 8 to 12 yard throw, you know, throw it to a tight end, throw it to a big tight end. And you know, he can't be found in that period of time. And Kadir was in the game. So it wasn't that. I can't figure out why they couldn't try to get him the football. I do have one other problem, but I want to let you respond to that first.
No, I think, you know, that's a good point. I mean, he did get the reps in camp. I think that helps. I think he should have some chemistry. It's just, I go back to the fact that it's just the first time he's actually been on an NFL football field. I think the next step is just seeing if he looks better the second time out, because, you know, there's a chance that you can say, okay, this was just, you know, one bad start, or not even a start. You know, he came in for the second half. He didn't look like he knew what he was doing, really. And he didn't look like he wanted to take any risks. He didn't seem like he was seeing the field very well. It was just like, if I don't see my immediate, like, first read, it's like, I'm going to dub it off or check it down or something. And it's hard to, like, really know, like, how much kind of game planning there was that goes into this. Probably not very much. They're probably just saying, you know, go out there, manage the offense, and don't take too many risks. We don't want, you know, turnovers. We don't want to kind of, like, take the offense off the field when we don't need to. But it's, yeah, it's, you still want to see some kind of rhythm within the offense. Maybe a couple of plays designed to get him an easy look. I would have liked to see something like that, but that didn't really seem to be there either.
Well, there were two cases. So, okay, we beat on Johnson already for running the ball unnecessarily, leaving the clean pocket with ample time and space. My problem with Leary was he dumped the ball off when he had ATS. And there are two big throws where this came up. The first instance was on a boot play they had. It's right at the beginning of Q3, 14-21. Zone block right, naked boot left, which is the opposite way they normally run it. You normally run it to get space to the right side by faking a run to the left. This was the opposite direction, so the naked boot goes in that direction. Nobody's following Leary. And again, immobile quarterback, doesn't typically get followed on the boot, and he's got all kinds of time. Right in front of him is Dayton Wade, you know, 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. Bearing down on Dayton Wade are three Eagles ready to make that tackle. And it's like you hardly ever see that part of the field so covered. There's nobody trailing him. And I you know, he's a right-handed quarterback, so he's seeing people come at him from the open side of the field, from the side of the field where the ball was originally snapped. Okay, so it's not like there's any pressure he's not seeing. I didn't see him survey the field at multiple levels to try and find a better target, but you can't go for the minus 1 yard check down when the whole design of the play is for that to be your last look, not your first. You know, the whole point of the boot play is to look 3-2-1 in terms of the level of your throw from longest to shortest. And you know, to give up on it that quickly was ridiculous. And then Wade, of course, got tackled with no gain after the catch for a loss of one.
Yeah, and it's hard to, like, you know, be too critical on him just for the same reasons discussed, but you definitely want to see more than that. And and getting back to the overall point of, do we have concerns about the quarterback position? I think for all these reasons, we do. Because, I mean, this is preseason. Like, it doesn't actually matter. This is your chance to go out there and, like, show you have something. And he wasn't willing to do that in that opportunity. Like I said, two more games, we will see. Maybe he kind of, like, gets the sea legs, you know, and figures things out and is willing to kind of, like, let it rip a little bit more. And like you said, that was kind of the MO of him coming out of college. He's a gunslinger. He's able he's willing to, like, take those shots down the field and, like, throw it into tight windows, probably to his own detriment, because he threw a lot of picks. But we didn't see him even, like, try that. So I'd like to see him actually, like, have that willingness and an ability. And then if he falls on his face doing it that way, then, you know, then I think we have a better answer. I think right now it's an incomplete, which is also a problem, because you want to be able to evaluate at this time of the year and this time of leading up to the regular season. So I think that the front office is going to have some hard decisions to make about the quarterback position.
Right. Well, I would, you know, I'm not for throwing the baby out with the bathwater in terms of this, but things need to be worked on with a couple of players really quickly that the Ravens are depending on during the regular season. Leary is not a guy they necessarily have to depend on during the regular season, but it is a position they probably want to be prepared at. And so they want to figure out during the rest of this preseason what it is they have. Do they have a project on their hands that could potentially pay off for them? Or do they have a guy who boy, it just doesn't seem like the elements are there and like it'll work within this offense. And, I'm concerned about that. There was one other ATS throw. I won't go into it specifically, but Q3, 134, another ATS throw, pissed it off to Gage 5 yards on the left side. Again, a lot of check down throws in this game. The Eagles have a very talented secondary. The Eagles played Kelly Ringo, who's a top draft pick in 23, I believe. I believe I have that correct.
Yeah, last year, yeah.
Yeah, and then Quinyon Mitchell, who was one of the top cornerbacks and was drafted, in fact, before Wiggins was. So, he's out of Toledo. There were some red flags with him, but he looks like a hell of a player anyway, at least among the cornerbacks in this last draft. And, I can understand some of the fear of not wanting to throw interceptions, and those are important. But boy, not a good night for Leary. All right. How about we move on? We talk about order of entry a little bit, because I think that gives you a little idea of what's going on in the Ravens' mind. We can maybe talk about that in terms of what it means for the rest of preseason. You know, did we really expect this and whatnot? We've already went over Johnson, Leary, then Jones. We'll talk about Jones's the incredible decision to have him, drop back on that. I'm not really bothered by it so much, but I will say this. If you like Vic Fangio, this is the time I'd be bringing up the fact that if this had happened in the first preseason game of 2023 instead of 24, when the Ravens still had their streak going, there's no way he snaps that football and drops back to pass. That's a kneel down, take the tie, extend the streak.
Yeah, I think that's true. Was it 16 seconds on the clock or 19 seconds?
16 seconds. They're 16 deep seconds. In their own end. So,
there's very little positive that can come out of that. It's hard to imagine. Maybe they had some kind of crazy play drawn up where they're going to do like the hook and ladder type of thing for a preseason game. I don't know. I don't even know why they put him out there. Leary's played the entire half. I don't understand why he put Jones out there for a single play. The whole thing has a lot of questions around it. I didn't catch if there was anybody who asked Harbaugh about it after the game. I doubt anybody would have the courage.
I wouldn't. I'll ask him some questions about football that I think other people won't, but I wouldn't ask him that question because it just gets too much at the heart of the Fangio matter.
Yeah. There's definitely some bad blood there. It was a choice. Let's put it that way. Gave a little drama to the end of the game, I guess. I mean, the missed field goal definitely was an interesting play. Then to come out, you're at the 40-yard line, right? So I guess maybe you feel like you can get a single play.
They didn't have a timeout range.
Left. Yeah.
I don't know. And the Eagles did. Come on, yeah. keep feeding them to me.
I don't know. So, I don't have anything left.
The entire thing reminded me of your typical 11-on-11 segment of practice that they go through, and the first team quarterback gets his reps, and the second team quarterback gets his reps, and the third team quarterback gets his reps, and he hurries onto the field to try and make sure he gets his single rep in. And sometimes he does, and sometimes they blow the whistle and they go to the next segment, and he's left saying, "Oh shit, I missed my chance there." But that's kind of like what it felt like for Jones there. I just hope it's not the only NFL memory the guy takes away, because imagine if he doesn't get any playing time the rest of camp. I he's not a great chance to be picked up by anybody else this year or next year or ever. And this could be the only tape he's got to show his grandkids. Yeah, so. It's college tape. It was college tape.
I didn't even think about that. But, maybe he'll have another preseason opportunity for the Ravens or another team. But, yeah, that's not – Basically, you want to have your one moment in the spotlight for sure.
Well, let's move on. Talk about some of these other positions. At running back, of course, they rested Henry and Hill. Wright, Ali, and Collier in that order was the order of entry. And I think the interesting thing there is at the top that Owen Wright has very clearly, in my mind, supplanted Ali as the number three back on this team. Definitely outplayed him in this one as well.
I agree. It was a little bit surprising. For me, I thought they might kind of like split in the first kind of series. And it seemed like, Ali was kind of like the mop up guy for the team. Or I guess him and Collier kind of split that, split that role. But I thought Wright played well, you know, he looked decisive. He looked like, he had good vision. There's, you know, the nice catch out of the backfield, kind of was it like a 16 yard catch and run. He looked like he has some, you know, some juice. He has some ability to run between the tackles. I was impressed, and it is a little bit concerning that Ali hasn't kind of pushed himself into, you know, that conversation more. You know, as I think he was fifth round pick, right? And you know, he was someone I thought looked pretty good in college. I thought it was a nice selection for the Ravens at that point in the draft. Obviously, with running back being kind of a need for the team, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, roster construction wise, where they go with that, because, you know, do you want to carry four running backs? You know, Wright is, this is his second year, right? He was on the practice squad last year. So he would still have what, 2 years of eligibility?
No, he didn't use a year last year. So he's still a year one player right now. He's not you're an R or a year one if you're in your second year after a practice squad. Yeah.
So, you know, you're losing a potentially a year with, if you kind of go with him and let Ali, you know, go.
No, they're the same. They're both essentially first year players. They have an R or one designation, but they're both in the same year of first of four.
Oh yeah. I was thinking with undrafted, you get three, but I guess they have the
RFA at the end of that.
So they get the RFA year, which is pretty inexpensive. So
yeah.
That makes sense. I guess you just go with the better player. You go with the one that you feel more confident with. And you think there's a chance that you would get four running backs carried? They have in the past, I believe, carried four.
No, I don't. I think they carry three, and they've got Ricard, and they're really looking to save positions. This is a year where you might want, I mean, there's multiple things they could do. First of all, they have Keaton Mitchell coming back potentially at some point during the year. I don't think it's going to be at midseason. I don't think it's going to be when everybody hopes it is. I think it'll be, if they're very lucky, they might get a player who can help them some for the playoffs. That's what I think. But if they happen to get him back a little early, they're probably still going to have to ramp him up to play more. So what they're getting back is not too much. They could, you know, have one of the two of Wright or Ali develop a minor injury that puts him on one of the four extra roster spots, and they could come back at midseason via IR DTR. That could be done. Something could happen to any of the four backs, honestly, because running backs, they get hurt. Or, you know, it's probably the easier player to get to the practice squad and leave him there. At this point, I'm not sure which one it is. I'm not sure which one is not at risk of being taken. But I think initially it might be neither of them is at a tremendous risk of being taken. Neither of them is a big speed merchant. So you're not talking about either of those guys being somebody that other teams say, well, this is our guy to get to the edge, you know. There's a lot of people who fit that body type in the case of either of them. It's just Wright does a lot of things well, and it'd be a shame if they lost him. And Ali, you know, in theory is a big breakaway runner who's had a big problem with fumbles in his college career. And of course that showed up on the return that was not good. It was a fumble on contact with the ground, but guaranteed he goes to the sidelines. And they even showed it. He was getting a talking to on the sideline on that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to put the ball on the ground, even if it technically wasn't a fumble, it's close play. It's going to be interesting. I think, you know, Ali probably has more potential interest from another team. You know, he was someone who I'm sure teams had grades on it to some extent, and you see him available on waivers. I think there's a chance that he gets picked up somewhere. Right. I mean, undrafted, hasn't really played it at all aside from a little bit of preseason. So there's probably less kind of information on him. So maybe you feel like he's someone you could potentially kind of slide onto the practice squad again. I it's hard to know, you know, what other teams think about, you know, players on other teams' rosters. So I would say that, you know, Ali is probably a little bit more risky, but I think if it's a matter of just like, you know, going with who's a better player, then you make that decision. I think for the Ravens, you know, you definitely want to have someone that you have faith that can come in and play a significant amount of snaps if you need to as a third running back. I mean, Derrick Henry has been very reliable for most of his career. He has had a couple injuries here and there, but he's getting older. I think it's hard to ignore that. And Justice Hill isn't necessarily someone who's going to be a full-time player. You know, I mean, he's a valuable player in his role, but he's not someone who's going to be on the field for 40, 50 snaps. So whoever their third running back is going to have snaps. He's going to play. He's going to get some play. So you want to have someone who actually is a threat, someone who can be just, you know, an actual like offensive weapon for you in certain situations. So you, I think you just really need to go with the one that you think makes the most of an impact. And, you know, what is it, 40, 50 touches, maybe? I think that's a reasonable amount of touches you could expect from someone who's in that position for the Ravens. So it's not immaterial to make this decision.
40, 50 touches the whole year.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be, I wouldn't think it's going to be a much larger role than that. Just over the course of the season, you'd think probably maybe three to five touches per game, I think is a reasonable expectation for your third running back, assuming no injury issues where you might have to obviously play more role.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right. Yeah. I think I would agree with that. And then once you're at that point, they have been trying to play Ali on special teams, but it's not obvious to me that he really fits on special teams. I don't want a lot of units. He's kind of smallish and that's not a great thing. So there's just some limitations there. I think Owen Wright probably gives you more of a balanced special team value. That you can use, you know, on the new kickoff rules and whatnot to make sure you have the best squad out there. Anyway, let's move on because Collier anyway got in very late, had some contributions to that 15 play drive, including the conversion to that 3rd and 4 with a nice run. But anyway, I don't think he's headed to make the team. He does some interesting things, but I just don't see it. Let's move on to tight end though, where likely an Andrews arrested. Kolar was out there and actually got pulled pretty early in the game. He played the first three series and only about, I think it was 8 snaps of offense. Scotty Washington ended up playing a lot. He was really the next tight end off the bench, then Ishmael, and then Riley Sharp last. And they kind of started integrating these players, but they never took Washington out of the game, really. He started playing on the first drive, and he played all the way through, well, to at least the second to last drive. We may not have it looks. Now we got the right players on the field. So he played until the second to last drive. The last drive was just one play, of course. And then they layered in players with Ishmael coming in and then Sharp coming in pretty much in the second half. But it was a graded play situation, I'll say. Any surprises in that group for you? Are you at all surprised maybe about the placement of Scotty Washington or?
I think they weren't really featured in this game in terms of like pass catching. So I feel like Ishmael might have been on the field more if they wanted to actually try to get him the ball in terms of like the passing. Because I mean, he's definitely more of the pass catching threat out of them, just given, you know, his, I mean, wide receiver background. He has, he's good size, you know, speed. He's got that combination that you kind of look for in your pass catching tight end. And he, you know, obviously he's acquitted himself nicely in training camp. So I thought that maybe he would get a little bit more looks in the offense. I don't think it's probably a position where the Ravens are going to carry a fourth tight end. My guess is there's not enough need for that on the roster, and between Ricard and the role that he's going to play in the offense, I think they have that covered from like the blocking side as well. So it's really just kind of getting your looks and see if there's a need to pull somebody off the practice squad or who might be that practice squad guy. And I think they're probably looking more so at blocking ability than and pass catching ability from that. So that might be why Washington was on the field more, because they like him in that role more.
They do. Ishmael's been a terror as a blocker as well. I put David Ajabo on the ground the other day, pancaked him, which is about, it's probably been about 10 days now, but to be there, and I was actually standing next to Kadri when it happened. He was so excited about it. It really was the highlight of the day in terms of an individual event. I mean, you have, it's not a lot to pick from a lot of days, you know, a big interception or two and a nice long catch. And then you see Kadri put Ajabo on the ground, and that was kind of nice to see. Let's move on to wide receiver, where the starters were Cunningham, Kirkwood, and Wallace. I guess I'm not really surprised by Kirkwood, and I'm definitely not surprised by Wallace, since he's the only kind of returning guy, and the way they treat veterans is good. And he played well as well. We can talk about that in the second part of this show. Cunningham has been kind of a surprise and a guy they've liked a lot during camp, who's been targeted by all the quarterbacks up and down the roster, which just means he's played with all of them. It's been kind of a neat story.
Yeah. I mean, he was potentially going to be a quarterback, right? I think they kind of took a look at him last year on the practice squad. I think maybe gave him some scout team quarterback reps, and I guess they just came to a decision that he was going to be more valuable to the team as a wide receiver. I haven't seen practices, so I can't really say if he's been really standing out there. But it's good to see him, you know, on the field and actually getting looks. This wasn't a game where the wide receiver was very featured. So it's hard to really know, like, if he kind of has the nuance of the position very well. I mean, converting from quarterback to wide receiver he has athletic ability for sure, but, you know, does he have the timing and the route running and all those things that kind of allow you to actually excel as a player in the NFL level? It's hard to evaluate that, I think, at this point. But I think, you know, the playmaking ability when he has the ball in his hands, I think, was clear from his college days. So I think he could potentially be a gadget type player for the Ravens if they wanted to go that route. My guess is he's probably going to be practice squad again, and kind of see if they can develop him further.
Yeah, he's maybe not the ideal, you know, shifty gadget player. The second team has a group that I would put one in there. Wade came on after this group. The other guy who came on, and this is kind of late, frankly, for who he is, Tez Walker, and he's nursing some sort of a, you know, abdominal rib cage injury, but he's been hit hard a lot in practice. Honestly, has a pretty slender frame too. Then Isaiah Washington and Sean Ryan, and any of those guys, really any of the four, I wouldn't have been surprised if they were in the place of Cunningham with the first group. And obviously some of it makes more sense if maybe it was, well, okay, depending on how you want to allocate your XYZ, it might be better for certain ones of those to move up. But that second group has a fair amount of talent in it and a fair amount of players that I think are hopes. In fact, the Cunningham, Wade, and Ryan, that group is where I think your darling wide receiver would come from if one comes out. I don't think that...
Yeah, I'll say Dayton Wade was the player who kind of like was a spark a little bit for the offense, yep. You know, his ability to run after the catch. I mean, he did have that one ugly drop early on, which was unfortunate because it killed a drive. And it was a nice play to, I think, by Johnson to get him the ball on the rollout there. But overall, you know, he looked like he was confident on the field, returning kicks as well. So, you know, there is kind of a array of skills that he potentially possesses. You know, they also just signed Russell Gage, who kind of also is that kind of like slot type player. I don't know what his chances of making the team. Maybe that's kind of the competition for like a last player on the roster bubble, because he I think he has some return ability as well. I'd have to go back and check on that, but I mean, he has a decent amount of, you know, NFL experience. He's had some solid years producing at the NFL level. So I mean, he is probably a little bit older now, and maybe he doesn't have quite the same quickness and athleticism he had a few years ago, but it'll be interesting to see how much look he gets, you know, maybe in like week two of the preseason.
Yeah, he's okay. If you think Russell Gage won't be 29 until January, so he's still a reasonable age, I guess. You're not acquiring, you know, a 30 plus wide receiver, but it's a little bit older than you like. The problem is he's already been in decline and had 6.1 yards per target when he last played, which was 2 years ago. So he didn't play at all last year. The year before, he had 51 catches. He's a guy who kind of reminds me, if you want to acquire Frank Sanders, you know, this is a guy who might give you a similar thing. And if you're lucky, he ends up being Tavius Robinson. If you're unlucky, he ends up being Frank Sanders in terms of what you get out of him in terms of production. That's going back 21 years now. So I shouldn't treat that as an obvious analogy for people, but Frank Sanders is a guy who came to the Ravens with something like 493 or 497 career catches. And he got his 500th career reception at home, and they announced it over the PA system. I've never been more underwhelmed by a moment. He said every single catch he's had with the Arizona fucking Cardinals. And you're asking me to get excited about that? Seriously. I mean, you know, if you're acquiring Albert Pujols and he hits your 600th home run for your franchise instead of for, you know, then I'd be excited about that. But honestly, I have a very hard time getting excited about that.
Are you saying he wasn't going to be a future Hall of Famer and
or Ring of Honor player for the Ravens? Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Neither. Yes. All right. So anyway, the last guy in the game was Gage, and yeah. he just got that one target in the game and wasn't on the field for very long at all. He's barely been at camps yet, so they had to have a fairly small package of plays for him. Now let's go into the offensive line, because I think there's a lot more storytelling that goes on with that. And if you happen to be around and have the article, or if you want to see what we're talking about, you can go to the article out there on filmstudybaltimore.com. And I posted the entire chart for order of entry. Preseason for now, several years, they've handled it the same way, where nobody changes in the middle of a drive. They stay with the same offensive line for each drive. We'll go through it. At left tackle, they had Jones, who plays most of the game, followed up by Pearl. So without getting into the actual play of those players, no real surprises in terms of order of deployment there.
No, and Pearl, he's a second year player. Is that correct, or is he a rookie?
I thought he was a rookie out of Illinois, but I could be wrong. Okay. Maybe he played somewhere else last year.
No. That, you're probably right. For some reason, I thought that he was someone who had been around, but
he played at Illinois.
Okay, not a surprise about Jones. I think that was the expectation, and I don't think either, there was a lot to really kind of comment on either one in like a major positive or negative fashion, which I guess is.
Oh, in terms of Pearl allowed 2 sacks, so that wasn't good. But
well,
yeah, he allowed the sack that lost the game. But you know, he's a measure months guy as opposed to a measure of bulls guy. So when you have measurables, you have, you know, 40 time and jumps and bench reps and whatnot. When you're a measurements guy, you have height, weight, and length.
Yeah.
And that's why he's in the NFL. And he played poorly in college. He was an all Big Ten kind of selection a couple of different years, but he's a length guy. He's a 35 1/8-inch arms and he's 6'6", and he really fits the position. Allegedly he has feet, and that's where I think some of this is not translated to the NFL level for him. But he's a guy who, you know, I think the Ravens have followed their own kind of guidelines for what makes a good left tackle, and they went for length, and it may not have worked out. Pearl's a guy who'll get another chance. So even if this fails, then I think he'll be cut by the Ravens. It's likely somebody else. It's pretty possible somebody else will take him off their practice squad as a project before the year is out.
Yeah, I mean, do you think practice squad for the Ravens first? Will they try to keep him there as someone?
He just doesn't fit in their top 10. I would think that if you look at the guys they've kept at offensive tackle the last few years, you know, guys like David Sharp, who've been, you know, they end up being traded for something about three times in their career. And I'm not talking about nothing. I'm talking like a sixth round pick instead of a seven, because the asking price is always higher at left tackle. The Ravens have kept a lot of guys like that around over the years. So I think it's possible. Yeah. That he would, at least they try and keep him, they lose him. But, you know, you go back to Sanat, they picked him in the sixth round, which was kind of a stretch in its own right. And then they lost him because other teams covet, you know, measurables at that position. Yeah. Or measurements in that case. All right, let's move on. Left guard Voorhees played until midway through the third period. Then Manning came in for two series and Doss came in for the very final play. No surprises for you in terms of order. You know, they got a fair amount of snaps out of Voorhees in this game. Getting him 30 snaps when they didn't have that many total offensive snaps is pretty good. What I'm a little bit down on is the fact that they didn't really get a good evaluation on Manning out of this game, on how much he's improved or not since last year when he was kind of the best lineman that they cut.
Yeah, I think obviously Voorhees was someone they need to see him in real action. So I think that's probably why he stayed out there a little bit longer. And, you know, he's kind of been given the starting left guard likely nod. I mean, heading into training camp, you know, throughout the OTAs. He didn't have the best game, I would say, but I think, you know, he's someone who they're going to still give ample opportunity to win that position. Partially because there aren't that many options aside from him. So I don't see anybody else anybody else who started this game. Like, I don't see Manning like leapfrogging him to kind of like take over that potential like starting role. I don't see he'll be given many, like a larger number of start or snaps in the next game, for instance, to kind of like see how he compares. I don't see that happening.
Right. I think what could happen with him is if they get Voorhees, if they get the ship, you know, turned in the right direction again with Voorhees and he has a better game, and we'll talk about that in the second show a little bit with some detailed, you know, scoring for Voorhees, then I think it's possible he could play a very limited role in the last preseason game, or maybe somebody else doesn't play at all, possibly because of injury or possibly because they feel like they know enough about the guy. And then we see Manning for a big evaluation game, and he could be there for, you know, three quarters, say, at one of the two guard spots or splitting time between both guard spots in that game. But I think they at some point they really need an evaluation game where, when I say that, by the way, that they would use him in a number of different ways that you want to see guards and actually design the game plan around him. So you have him pull a number of times from whatever guard spot he's at. You run the plays in that way, and you make sure that he can handle combination blocks and of certain different types and whatnot. So, you just get him to do the job of a guard and see if you can really evaluate him, see if he can handle that.
Yeah, and I do think that, I mean, he could potentially be in the mix for the last O-line position for the team. So I think you definitely want to see, you know, what he potentially has to offer. So it is a little bit of a tricky spot because I think Voorhees needs reps, especially like real game reps. He hasn't, this was, I mentioned earlier with Leary, this is also Voorhees' first NFL playing time. Like, I mean, he's been around the team. He's obviously been practicing, but he missed the entire first season because of the injury. So, you know, this is the first time he's out there actually, you know, with four other guys with the full offense against another team. So it's, I think there's potential for him to build on this experience and, you know, move to the next kind of like level of play. And I think we just need to see more reps out of him and see what he's capable of doing. But yeah, we'll talk more about the details later.
Yeah. So let's move on to center. Ben Cleveland, not a surprise start, I wouldn't say, because we've seen him a little bit at center in camp, particularly when they had two 11-on-11 fields. They were using a lot of different guys at center. So Voorhees got reps, Cleveland got reps, other people got reps. And anyway, he's the one who they picked to start for when Linderbaum is out. And they needed someone to really handle a lot of this load. But I will remind you, they drafted a center in the seventh round this year in Nick Samak. And he didn't show up until the next to last drive of the game. So he's out there for that 15-play drive. Talk a little bit later about how he did on that. But he's been jumped on the depth chart, double jumped on the depth chart by Cleveland getting this start and by Dalcourt, who was in after Cleveland and before Samak.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. It must just be some level of faith that they had. They wanted to see Dalcourt. They like what they've seen and from practice, and that's the only explanation why. Because you would think that you'd think that Samak would kind of have that clear like second in this game.
So I think there is another explanation. At least there's one I can come up with. Is that Dalcourt is really a guard who's playing center, but he's a guard center combo guy where Nick Samak is a center only. There's talk about him developing a guard. It's a pipe dream. It's like trying to develop a smallish cologne into a guard. Or saying that, you know, we'll get into Linderbaum here, but you know, a really smallish guy who you're trying to develop into a guard. There's no reason to believe it would work out for Nick Samak. He's a center only. And I think on most rosters in the NFL now, you can't afford to have a center and then a guy who's only a backup center. It's too much of a burden on your roster and the potential versatility you have to do that. So even if, you know, you'd almost want to be carrying him on the practice squad, which is maybe what they're angling for anyway. And if they have an injury to Linderbaum, they could bring up Samak and get him in there. It may even be a hiding him kind of situation they're working through right now. I kind of have that opinion about Ishmael, by the way, that they might be trying to kind of hide who he is.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting because that's, I mean, he was a seventh round pick, right? He's probably someone who could have been probably a priority free agent for teams. But I don't know if he's someone that teams will be looking to grab. You know, the long running thing with the NFL is, you know, you have 150 starting offensive linemen, 160 starting offensive linemen, and how many of them are actually good. So teams are looking to find dart throws at offensive line. Constantly, you know, someone who they might have, you know, some athletic upside or someone that one of their scouts had a high grade on. And if he's suddenly available, you know, then all of a sudden there's a chance that he's no longer going to be on your practice squad because, you know, there's one other team that had one person who graded him highly. So I think that makes sense to kind of limit the number of reps. Cause if he goes out there and is like blowing, you know, people away, then the Ravens would either have to have him or then you have a high chance of losing him, which the Ravens we've lost players in the past. You know, they've put players on the practice squad and had them taken. So it wouldn't be the first time that's happened.
Right. They've even had surprise trades early in camp. And if you remember Nick Easton, who ended up playing a fair number of NFL seasons, when he was a UDFA with the Ravens, he was traded like early in camp. I think it was the 49ers at that time, who just all of a sudden had an injury at center and they needed to fill it. Something like that, I guess that wouldn't shock me, but I think the reason Dalcourt is ahead, if I just had to pick one reason, it's he has guard center versatility and Samak doesn't. Yeah. And, all right, let's move to right guard. Daniel Faalele gets the start. Now putting Cleveland at center was ingenious in a way, cause you're getting him snaps and you're not making the decision obvious to either Cleveland or Faalele who's won the right guard job yet. So, and honestly, with Voorhees' game, his name's back in the mix too for a 3-to-make-2 situation.
Yeah, I think there's still decisions to be made, probably at both positions. I would think left guard is probably a little bit more solidified, but it's hard to know for sure at this point. Falele, I think, is a bit of a stretch personally at right guard, just because of the size and the kind of he's a little bit lumbering. The amount of times that the Ravens like to move and pull, he just doesn't fit that kind of ability very well. So it's a stretch for me, and I think he's not really potentially the best tackle either. So I think they're just trying to see if they can get anything out of him. Honestly, like that's kind of like my opinion on the matter. Is they took a third round pick, I think, or maybe the first pick of the fourth round with him. Yeah. And he hasn't really panned out. And I don't see much of a path forward for him. Maybe this is like them trying to say this is like really the only way that he's actually going to contribute for us. Which is unfortunate, but at least they're giving him the opportunity to make a case for himself to stay on the roster. And if he turns out to be a starting guard or even a backup guard, that's not nothing. So it could be worse.
I was talking to Zerebeck about this at camp recently, and he said that they really would like to give the job to Falele in part because he's the hardest worker on the team. He spends most time at the facility, is always trying it. But at the same time, if they're screaming at him all the time about, what he's doing. And they had Dallas Sanders was at the microphone fairly early in camp. And I asked him, specifically, what have you seen out of his feet and out of his use of his hands? And he started off with his footwork is not bad. And then I knew he was trying to kind of formulate the words of how he was going to say that his arms were bad without actually saying that. Cause he just doesn't use his hands well.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike. He doesn't do any of that. It's an entire discussion of itself, but when you weigh that much, just occasionally strike and throw the other guy completely off his pass rush plan and you'll have something. And it's true on the interior. It's true on the exterior. On the interior, you're going to have a lot of shorter arm guys. If you let them get to the body, you will regret it.
Yeah.
They're going to be guys who can get underneath you. And at 6'8", everybody's underneath him. It's going to be frustrating. So anyway, I think we're going to see a switch there. I think the Linderbaum injury is actually giving them a reprieve from that decision for right now. But I think they kind of already decided in their minds that Cleveland is the more likely starter at right guard. So we'll see how this plays out. I mean, let's put it this way. I certainly hope we're not seeing Cleveland at center come week one. I think, it wouldn't be the worst possible downgrade, but it would mean two downgrades on the line, one at center and one at right guard.
Yeah, and I guess we'll talk about Makari here in a second, but do you think he would be the starting center in that situation if Linderbaum couldn't play in week one?
Interesting question. I don't really have the answer for that because they might really covet the idea of being that large to have Cleveland in there instead of Makari. It's a big change, and they might really want that. It seems like there's a lot of attraction to Cleveland if you deal with what it does to your pulling game. To having Cleveland, Linderbaum, and Falele consecutively in the middle, there's a lot of attraction to that. But that is, basically when Dallas Sanders got to the end of talking about how he's not using his arms without actually saying that directly, he basically said, he's 6'8", 370 pounds or 380 pounds, whatever. And that you just can't teach that. So,
and I think in this game, we saw how that can play out in a positive way. And he had some good reps and like one-on-one pass protection reps. And I think there is some benefit for him playing inside because he doesn't have to deal with the kind of quick twitch speed off the edge. And he can just kind of be in the way and use his size a little bit easier. I think for him, it's actually more of an issue in the running game in terms of what he can contribute as a guard, because he can push the guy in front of him. But if he's asked, and similar to how I feel to Cleveland at center, if he's asked to pull, he's slow. He's slow on his feet. And that's a challenge in an offense. That I think one of the points of this offensive line makeover was to get more athletic up front. And if you're having Falele as your right guard and Cleveland as your center, I'm not sure you're actually that much more athletic up front than you were last year.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. So I'm going to go to the last position here at right tackle. McCary, Rosengarten, McCary, McCary, Rosengarten, 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 Sala, Sala, and then Simpson. So they did some alternation with McCary, McCary, and Rosengarten, which is the only position they did it at.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to get, and that's an obvious indication that at some point during the season, they want to have Rosengarten have that position. He only ended up playing 18 snaps because the Ravens couldn't move the ball at all. And Sala actually happened to be in there for a 15-play drive, so it wasn't like he got much less playing time than anybody else. In fact, he did fine in terms of his total playing time. He just isn't any good. So it's the darn truth of this right now. Sala's a second-year developmental lineman who really he can't play. He's a terrible pass blocker. It's not like he's special in terms of his run blocking either. But it's a sad situation, and it's all the more ironic, amusing. I don't know what they call it exactly, that they tried to hoodwink us with the Salas, the starting left guard last year, when they were really doing it to motivate Simpson.
Yeah, I think. The rep on Sala was, he's athletic. You know, that's what he was when they drafted him out of Oregon. Oregon, right? Yeah. He's big, but he really doesn't do anything else other than kind of, I don't think he can play right tackle. I don't know why they're even trying that. I mean, he wasn't able to block as a guard. Tackle is a more difficult position. I think they're just putting him out there as a body at this point. So, that was an unfortunate pick, but what can you do about it at this point? He had his chance, and it turned out that he wasn't really going to do much for you. So, you just move on, I think, at this point, unfortunately.
Right. Well, they've taken some good developmental opportunities on the offensive line, and they've worked out with good coaching. They do a pretty good job, I think, both of scouting and developing. So if one doesn't work out, they've certainly got a lot of credits in the bank in terms of credibility there. All right. I think we're going to have to close this down for the first show. The second show, we'll come back, talk a little bit about scheme, but not very much, jump right into some offensive line scoring of the particular players. And then we'll talk about some individual performances, give our MVPs for the game on the offense. But first, Gabe, where can people talk about football with you online if they'd like to do that?
Yeah. The best place to reach me is on Twitter, at Gabe Fergie. On Twitter, Ravens off season is coming to an end. We're starting to get into the real season, so definitely will be more active on there. I've mostly been following the Orioles recently, and that's most of my
frustration.
My frustration ire has been bent towards the season is seemingly slipping out of the grasp. But still 71 team first in the majors to get there. So can't complain too much, but yeah. Twitter, love to talk about Orioles, love to talk about the Ravens. That's probably, the best place for me right now.
All right. I really appreciate you as always coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to hit me up with an idea for a film study short, please do that. I'm always open to ideas like that. DM me on Twitter. And if you want to do the show a favor, hit us up with a short review, 50 words or less, favorite podcast platform. Always appreciate that for driving content or driving traffic to the show. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus, with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate, and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.